had a 40-point triple-double tonight in an NBA Finals game. That is the best game of your career so far. What was your mindset throughout every minute?
Win. I don't care about a triple. I don't care about none of that. I really don't. I want to win. We did that. I'm happy with the outcome.
That was the Miami Heat's Jimmy Butler, who, in a must-win game Sunday, put up an NBA Finals performance for the ages. But with the Lakers still up 2-1 and injuries plaguing the Heat roster, are Butler's heroics too little, too late? Or is this the start of yet another shocking Miami run? Today, ESPN's Malika Andrews brings us deep inside the bubble ahead of Game 4 and reflects on what she's learned from covering the strangest NBA postseason ever. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, October 6th. This is ESPN Daily. Malika, what day is it? How long have you been inside this bubble?
Well, I know Wednesday is 100 days.
Wow.
So let's count backwards.
So we are talking on day, carry the two. Yeah, day 98?
98. Yikes.
Malika Andrews has been inside the NBA bubble from the beginning. I caught up with her yesterday afternoon. Where are you right now?
I'm in my hotel room. I sprinted back here. The buses only run every half hour between the arena and the hotel. So I took the 3:30 bus back from the availability of the Miami Heat and the Lakers back here. But I remembered I hadn't gotten tested today. So then I hustled to get my COVID test. And now here I am.
A standard order of operations for Malika on day 98. So you mentioned you just came from availability with the Heat and the Lakers. And look, the Miami Heat, that is a team that maybe thought they were going to leave the bubble sooner than they actually are. The Lakers are up 2-1. Miami is going to try to even this series in Game 4. So before we talk about Game 4, I want to ask you about Game 3 because there was a historical, enormous, throw-in-the-adjective-here performance from Jimmy Butler in a truly must-win game, a triple-double, 40 points, 13 assists, 11 rebounds. How would you describe Butler's performance on Sunday?
Well, first, I think if you, Pablo, were to ask the Miami Heat about leaving the bubble, or if they were on track to leave the bubble sooner than they initially thought, I think that they would have said they always thought that they were going to shock the world, prove people wrong, whatever sports trope you want to put in there. Jimmy Butler doesn't like to be called an underdog.
I just don't think that we're underdogs. I don't. So what that nobody picked us to be here? That's okay. I'm pretty sure nobody's picking us to win either. That's okay. But we understand that. We embrace that.
We were sort of joking after Game 3 about, well, what do you want to be called then? And I pulled up a thesaurus and I suggested to him maybe dark horse was a better phrase for what he would like to be. And he said, yeah, you know what? I like that. Can we call it a stallion? And I said, you know, dark stallion. I think stay away from that. That's probably not what we're going to say. But my impression of Jimmy Butler's historic performance by all these metrics in terms of him being the first player to have that sort of night without shooting a three-pointer since Shaquille O'Neal in 2002, only the third player to have a 40-point triple-double. The list goes on and on. But to watch the Heat in their post-game interviews have to walk this line between, on the one hand, being incredibly excited about but not necessarily surprised over what Jimmy Butler was able to do in 45 minutes of play, by the way, and also reckon with the fact that they are still down a game in this series. They are still largely numerically not the favorites to overcome the hole that they've dug themselves into. That was kind of an interesting balance for them because it wasn't just a celebration of what Jimmy Butler did. And I don't think that was just out of humility. They know that in the grand scheme of things, one impressive night is good, but it doesn't change the makeup of this series.
I want to get into what Heat coach Eric Spoelstra said after Butler's performance.
How else do you say it other than, you know, Jimmy effing Butler? He's a supreme elite competitor, and we needed it.
What has Jimmy Butler meant, Malika, to the identity of this particular Miami Heat team in this moment?
Well, in true Spo way, he did say effing. That wasn't even a... that was a self-edit in real time. But during a game in an earlier round when I was a sideline reporter during the playoffs, Eric Spoelstra told me that one of the reasons why Jimmy fits so well with the Heat is because of all of the reasons that other teams have run from or decided they could not jive with him. So the fact, Eric Spoelstra told me, that Jimmy Butler is over the top, he said, good, we're over the top. The fact that he cares and sometimes goes at his teammates verbally, good, we care. We go at each other verbally. All of that seems to have fit, has fallen into place for Jimmy, because previously his sort of, I'm going to say what I want to say when I want to say it, no matter what anybody else thinks or how they will respond, that's gotten him in trouble. But with this particular Heat group, because of the way that they're coached, because of the way their locker room is, because they have Udonis Haslam and these other guys setting that tone, it fits. It isn't this constant source of being offended. It's what makes them good. And so when Jimmy's able to have a performance like that, they're genuinely happy for him because there is really no sense in that locker room of, well, Jimmy Butler is that a-. It's when Jimmy Butler is an a-, there is a purpose for it and we are going to listen.
I want to ask you about one of those alleged moments from Jimmy at the end of game three, because Jimmy Butler makes this layup to put the Heat up 9 with just over a minute left to play in the game.
Butler the drive, the runner, he banks it in. Oh, what a masterpiece from Jimmy Butler. And the Heat go up by 9 with 1:13 remaining.
And I think he's saying they're in trouble.
And it looks like he says, you're in trouble, right directly to LeBron James. Yeah. And Malika, you did the reporting on this. You specifically asked Jimmy about that quote. What did he have to say?
Well, I wanted to make sure that that's what he said because it sure looked like it. And he said, yeah, that's what I said.
Jimmy, first, I just wanted to clarify. It looked like you said you're in trouble. Is that what you said?
That is what I said.
Okay. And then secondly, you said last...
And then I moved on to ask him another thing. And he circled back and said...
First of all, we're not going to act like I'm just out there talking trash because I'm not. Bron said it to me at the end of the first. That's what happened. I just said it to him in the fourth quarter.
Jimmy's recollection was that in the first quarter, after the Heat made a run, they got up big, and then the Lakers did what they do, and they started to chip away at that. And Jimmy alleges that LeBron said to him, you're in trouble. And so at the end of the game, Jimmy parroted that back to LeBron. That's who Jimmy is. I'm not saying Jimmy is an ass. I'm saying that there are people who have perceived his sometimes pompous, sometimes cocky, sometimes out there actions in a society that has decided that being meek is more polite. Jimmy is everything that that is not. And finally, in Miami, that fits. They also feed off of it. I mean, you're seeing rookies like Tyler Hero snarling his lip late in the game. I mean, you can't tell me that's not reminiscent of some sort of Jimmy Butler swag.
And he was 6-for-18, by the way, at 20 years old. And to your point, though, what he felt, it seemed to be powered by the alleged you just described.
I think Jimmy would not say that he is an ass. He would say, if people take my actions to be ass-like, I don't care. So be it. Tell me I'm wrong.
So in terms of whether he is wrong on this he said kind of prophecy, right? You're in trouble. What's going to determine that, or would help determine it greatly, is whether Bam Adebayo and Goran Dragic are actually going to play in this game tonight, Malika. And both players have been out with considerable injuries since game one. So what's the latest you're hearing on their availability, and how much is their absence being felt by Miami in this series?
Well, their absence is huge. I mean, just from a sheer size standpoint, the Lakers, when you look at them out on the floor, they're huge. And to not have Bam Adebayo out there to just match them in the paint is to Miami's detriment. Now, they also know, the Heat know, that they're not going to beat the Lakers at their big size game. So not having Goran, not having that shooting, not having that ability to be able to attack from the outside with him being such a reliable source of their offense, that's also a big thing that Miami is missing. On Monday, Goran and Bam Adebayo spoke to reporters for the first time since their game one injuries. And what I gleaned from that is that it is highly unlikely that they will play in game four. Mm. Now, neither one of them said that, but Bam Adebayo had previously said, and he genuinely believed it on multiple occasions to different reporters, I'm going to play in game two. I'm going to play in game three. And he wants to. He believes he can. And in his comments on Monday, he said that if they tell me I am ready to go today, tomorrow, the next day, I'll be ready as soon as they tell me, but really it's a medical staff decision.
I'm getting better. You know, it's up to the medical staff. You know, I'm trying to get back as quickly as possible, but when they say I'm ready to play, I'll be out there.
That hesitancy, deferring to the medical staff, told me that he's as ready as he's going to be, but he has to wait for someone else to say something. And he also said that because it's a neck injury, they're being extra cautious. Mm. Goran, on the other hand, he described his plantar fascia injury. He said, I snapped it, is what he said. And so that isn't going to be healed in this series. The Heat medical staff and Goran would have to make the decision to inject it and play through that injury in a very real sense. He isn't going to get better. They would just have to make the decision that it is worth it to play.
I don't even really know where the plantar fascia is. I just know that when you said the word snapped, my entire foot just started like radiating in sympathy. And all of that, Malika, it sets the stage for what I think is going to be a deeply competitive game four. So across the way, in the Lakers' part of the bubble, what are you hearing from their side of things?
They were incredibly confident after their game three loss. And in many ways, their source of confidence is objectively correct. They didn't play well in game three. That's just simply what it is. And so because it's not just that they were outplayed while they weren't playing near their highest level of basketball. And even then, they made several runs to close the sizable gaps that Miami was able to build. That probably should give them confidence. Anthony Davis had one of the worst games he has ever had in the playoffs, especially if you're looking at the number of turnovers he had. The likelihood that he has that sort of game multiple times is probably not very high. And you have to remember that LeBron James has said that before every game, he looks at Anthony Davis, and Anthony Davis has said that this is kind of a place where he gains confidence, is LeBron looks at him and says, You are the best player in the world. If LeBron James is hyping you up and saying that before every game, you're going to be going out there ready to run through a wall. So you better believe he's going to be putting that on himself to try to do so moving forward. And really, when Anthony Davis is firing, that's when the Heat start to struggle. And so if they can get back to that, the Lakers are likely going to start rolling again. And that's where they're feeling like we're not going to panic over this.
How do you think this shakes out tonight? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, you know better than to ask me to make predictions because one, I don't do them well, and two, I try to avoid doing them.
Spoken like a true journalist, Malika Andrews.
I think the only thing I can guarantee is that this game should be one of the best that we've seen because the Lakers are going to want to punch back, and the Heat, from Jimmy's own words, are not going to, quote, lay down, and they want to tie it at 2-2. It's going to be really, really challenging. The Lakers are the favorites for a reason. When you look at them out on the court, they look like the favorites more minutes than the Heat does. But Game 4 has the potential to make this an interesting series where it was previously thought of as sort of open and shut.
All right, Malika, coming up, I want to talk about what you've learned after 98 days inside this massive experiment known as the NBA bubble, and what you're feeling as you approach the very end.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So, Malika, correct me if I'm wrong here. Are you the longest tenured media member inside the NBA bubble?
Only by a matter of hours. Chris Haynes arrived like 8 hours after I did. But yes, Chris Haynes, myself, Melinda Adams, and Jonathan, one of the TNT producers, we all arrived on June 29th. I think everyone else arrived July 12th and then didn't get out of quarantine, media members, until July 20th.
Does it feel like, I don't know, like the end of summer camp? I'm trying to figure out, like from the outside, what it's like to be at the end or near the end of the road of like the grandest sports science experiment that we may have ever seen.
I had a conversation with Adam Silver the other day, and he was asking me about this experience because I've kind of seen so many different iterations of the rules of what this bubble is. And he asked me about how I felt about leaving. And I sort of joked with him that I think I have a little bit of, I'm a little bit torn. On the one hand, I'm excited to go back to New York and order in from my favorite sushi restaurant. But on the other hand, I genuinely think it may be the safest place in the United States right now. And when I first got here, I thought there's no way that it can go as well as we know it has gone. And when I leave here, I'm going to go back into the sort of hibernating, the quarantining, the isolation that I was practicing before I came down here. And so I told Adam, I kind of have bubble Stockholm syndrome. I kind of want to stay.
But I am fascinated. Like, just describe what the bubble feels like now, given that there are only two teams left. How different is it?
It's quiet. It was quiet when there were four teams. This final chapter of the bubble is actually much closer to the beginning, because these last couple of days, Pablo, we've actually seen sort of an uptick. I was asked about the safety protocols, if they're still as rigid now as they were back in June, early July. And the answer is yes, but it wasn't always that way. For about a month, month and a half in sort of the middle, things started to relax just a little bit. We have these proximity devices that we wear. And for a while, the league wasn't enforcing wearing those. For those of us who've been here a while, they broke. We lost them, needed to replace them, this, that, and the other. Over the last week or so, the NBA has started to enforce again, when you show up for games, you must wear that. Wow. We are getting more automated text messages. I'll read you one.
Please.
From the league. So usually this is the number, this 218 number, text you at 11 or clock PM or so if you haven't already gotten your COVID test to remind you to get a PCR test. And that's all I'd ever heard from this number up until Friday. On Friday, it's game two of the finals, exclamation point. A reminder that following the health and safety protocols, including mask wearing and physical distancing, helped us get here. We all want to finish strong, so throughout the finals, we'll be sending out regular reminders that promote healthy behaviors. On Saturday, wearing a mask reduces the spread of COVID-19. Carry an extra mask to be prepared, and remember to keep your mask on outdoors unless you're walking by yourself. On Sunday, game three tonight. If you're headed to the arena, remember your credentials and to test before you go. At the arena, all spectators must wear their masks at all times. And today, this one was my favorite. Spending time on the Destino lawn or by the pool today? Please remember to maintain 6 feet of distance from others, even when outdoors. So we've seen over the last couple of days this sort of uptick in reminders and health and safety, because we are almost at the finish line of this science experiment, for lack of a better term, and they don't want it to crumble at the last minute.
Do you think that the increase in those warnings and reminders is because of what's happening in our country at large right now?
Well, it's an interesting dichotomy. I certainly wouldn't be surprised if that was a part of it. People ask me why I wear masks on television in an empty arena when no one is around. Mm. Well, one, there are people around that you can't see. There are people who are cleaning up the media tables. There is my producer that is, you know, not quite 6 feet away from me holding the camera and setting everything up. And being tested every day just confirms you don't have the virus. It doesn't prevent you from getting it. And so Adam Silver, when he was asked what he learned from this whole experience, he said that essentially science works. Doing those things works. But the day after Donald Trump tweeted that he was positive for COVID-19, that was felt here in the bubble. People were talking about it. It wasn't something that was this very distanced event that happens in that outside world. It was, we're closer to being in that outside world again than we have ever been. And this is what it's like? Huh.
It is what it's like, Malika. You know, you're somewhere between like a time traveler, an unfrozen caveman. I don't know which one. Like, you're going to reintroduce yourself into society. And I wish I could offer you a lot more than sushi when it came to
oh, don't knock
good
that. I'm
vibes.
Excited.
but when you describe that feeling, that fondness, honestly, that you have for the bubble and your experience, I also know it's been tough. Mm. What's been the toughest challenge?
I mean, there's been a lot of challenges for different reasons, to be honest with you. I think that initially getting over the personal fear of assuming risk in leaving my own home. I hadn't been going out and going back to be around people again. Initially, that was challenging. Navigating the different rules of access was challenging. And that's, we saw sort of adapt over the time we've been here. And it ended up that the access was far better than I initially feared it would be without us being able to go into locker rooms. So navigating that was challenging. The Bucks hiatus was one of the most important stories I think that sports has had to reckon with in a long time, because of the fact we are talking about a Black man getting shot at the hands of the police while coronavirus was still raging, is still raging across this country, while these players are in a bubble, what privilege that brings for them, how they reckoned with that, and then making the decision to continue to play. I think all of that was and continues to be an incredibly complex moment in history that will stand as important for a very long time. There are so few times when sports isn't the side dish, it's the meal. And for these last few months, it wasn't the little brother of any newsroom. It was on the forefront of so many people's minds, because having this succeed gave people hope that if they follow what scientists are saying, there is a future that isn't overshadowed by fear of getting sick. Mm. And so, as hard as it was to be inside this bubble and reckoning with your own guilt of being in a privileged position while sure. the world was going through some really trying times, it was also, I mean, it was a privilege to be able to do this. And that's what makes me feel fulfilled. It's not the stat line of Jimmy Butler. Wow, that was freaking incredible. Like, awesome to watch.
It was.
But that doesn't, you know, that fills you up. Even Jimmy, it filled him up for a day. It's the lasting thing for him is winning. The lasting thing for me is telling impactful stories. And this has been a trove of impactful stories.
Malika Andrews, the longest tenured media member in this science experiment, thank you again for joining ESPN Daily.
Thanks for having me, Pablo.
And by the way, I look forward to sending you some sushi when you, you know, get back to the outside world.
Oh, that bill is on you. No question.
I'll even throw in the sea urchin. The uni, yes. You have uni waiting for you, Malika Andrews, in the outside world.
What a generous soul.
Coming up, the Houston Texans fired their head coach and GM yesterday, and more than both of them are to blame.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Here's another story I want you to know. The head coach of the Houston Texans, Bill O'Brien, got fired yesterday, which at first seemed like something of a logic puzzle. The job of the general manager is to fire the head coach, and the general manager of the Texans, well, that's also Bill O'Brien, which is how Houston got into this whole mess in the first place. Head coach Bill O'Brien made plenty of mistakes, like when Houston led Kansas City 21-0 after the first quarter of the divisional round in January, only to lose 51-31. But head coach Bill O'Brien was still a generally respected offensive mind. It was actually GM Bill O'Brien that messed things up for both of them. Because GM Bill O'Brien was not simply terrible, trading away stars like DeAndre Hopkins and Jadeveon Clowney for seemingly personal reasons. GM Bill O'Brien also had this massive conflict of interest. As in, he was primarily interested in helping his head coach. Now, it's no coincidence that almost all the best-run franchises across sports are structured like the branches of government. They work together, but they also remain separate and balance out each other's powers. The head coach focuses on the near term and winning right now. And the general manager is theoretically there to take the long view, to set the team up for success beyond the present. But in Houston, that view was only as long as the head coach's job security, which was increasingly short. And so O'Brien's front office mortgaged the future last year, trading away top draft pick after draft pick after draft pick to get help in the near term, right now. And in came gap-filling players like offensive tackle Laremy Tunsil, and out went the Texans' first-round pick in 2020, and their first and second-round picks in 2021. Which all created a different sort of gap to fill. Because O'Brien not only leaves the Texans, who have the highest payroll in the NFL, at 0-4 this season. Next year's first and second rounders, who may be the most valuable of their kind in the entire draft, also now belong to the Miami Dolphins, which means that the future for Houston looks barren too. So, by all means, blame Bill O'Brien for all of this. Blame both of him, in fact. But don't forget Houston's owner, Cal McNair, the guy who ultimately stepped in to fire him, and the guy who should have separated those powers to begin with. I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.